For more than a decade, one of the most used phrases to describe the next chapter of healthcare has been precision medicine. In January, President Obama called for a major push to move medicine away from the one-size-fits-all approach to an era which drugs and other treatments are crafted to fit individuals. Perhaps the best person to explain what the Precision Medicine Initiative will mean is Dr. Eric Green. He is director of the National Human Genome Research Institute, which is part of the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Green, welcome to Sound Medicine.
Happy to be here.
So before we start discussing precision medicine, we'd love to get a brief definition from you about what it is and how it really differs from how medicine is generally practiced now.
Yeah, I think it's an important thing to talk about to start the conversation. As a physician, I can tell you it's not like we don't attempt to be precise in the practice of medicine. But the truth of the matter is, for most of the things that we do in medicine now, we act as if an average patient is in front of you because that's the best tools we have available to us. When we pick medications, when we pick other types of therapies, we make our best judgments based on data that we have and information we have of the average patient. We can do better than that. And we know of examples where we do better than that. For centuries, we've been able to give people prescription eyeglasses, and that's an example of being more precise. Starting a little over 100 years ago, we started doing blood transfusions more precisely by giving people the right type of blood. But there's a whole list of things that could be done more precisely in the practice of medicine. Everything from picking the right medication and the right dose for a patient to how we treat diseases like cancer to a variety of other medical decisions that are made every day. And this has come on because of some major scientific advances over the last 10 and 20 years.
Let's talk a little bit about cancer. In a recent paper in the New England Journal of Medicine, the director of the NIH, Francis Collins, said some targeted treatments for cancer have shown spectacular benefits. What was he referring to?
Well, he's referring to some of the earliest wins in using information about a specific tumor's genomic makeup, the DNA in the tumor, that has been deranged, has changed. The reason why the tumor is growing out of control is because there have been changes in the DNA in those cells. And because of tools and technologies of genomics, especially over the last 10 years, we are now able to look and study in a clinical way the genome of that tumor. And that has opened our eyes to all sorts of important information, and for some specific types of cancer, truly has led to some spectacular benefits in that we can more precisely determine the subtype of cancer, and we can more precisely determine what's broken in those tumors, and therefore more precisely decide the best drug to use or the best treatment regimen to use. But I really want to stress these early wins are just the tip of the iceberg. And we believe that we are now in a position over the next 5, 10, 20 years to generalize this approach to dozens and dozens of different types of cancer.
So when you have a tumor that gets looked at and we know the genomic makeup of that tumor, do we have the knowledge to really match it up with the exact medicines that will help?
Well, again, early days, but the early examples are inspirational because for some of the specific examples that have been shown to be successful, we've gone from being essentially blind to the best way to treat it, that particular type of cancer, to knowing exactly what pathway, what circuitry is broken in those cells, and therefore what drugs can overcome that deficiency and sort of head off the tumor in a way that really is an effective treatment. Again, we know the underlying biology of what's gone wrong, whereas, 10 years ago, we were blind to that. We were just pouring poisons in people, just hoping that on average, some of the people would benefit from this.
For its short-term goals, this Precision Medicine Initiative will focus on cancer. So what are the current obstacles in cancer treatment that precision medicine researchers will really be trying to solve here? Any examples?
Yeah, well, the Precision Medicine Initiative has as its earliest goals an acceleration in using genomic approaches for cancer care. And I think some of the biggest obstacles are really refining these approaches. We have some initial examples where things look quite promising for a limited set of cancers. And now we really want to expand not only the size of the studies to really refine that approach and even make it more precise for those types of cancer, but more importantly, to bring this to the fore for more different types of cancer and really accelerate that process in a very aggressive way.
Okay, I'm going to bring up a word that we in the media love. I think scientists and physicians and cancer researchers hate, and that's the word breakthroughs. But I was wondering, you mentioned for some cancers, is there a particular cancer that you think precision medicine is very close or is making any kind of breakthroughs now?
Well, some of the early wins have certainly been in certain types of pediatric cancers. Yeah. And certain types of blood cancers, leukemias in particular, and then some examples of breast cancer. I'm not a cancer researcher. I don't have as much expertise as many of my colleagues here in the National Cancer Institute. But some of these earliest examples have just been striking, and you see the mortality rate go down considerably by using these approaches.
Okay. So what are the moving pieces that this initiative would require? I mean, such as academic researchers and the pharmaceutical industry, and have they been calling for this type of project?
I think when you're going to see the other component of the Precision Medicine Initiative moving beyond the cancer component to what we're calling the U.S. National Cohort, it is absolutely an audacious endeavor that will involve not only the different sectors you just mentioned, academic sector and private sector and government researchers. It's also going to involve people, the communities, society, Americans. This is going to be absolutely a participant-driven endeavor as well, where we are going to engage well over 1 million people to join forces to help us try to tackle these big problems in biomedical research.
So 1 million Americans asked to participate in this study, or will be when you're ready. Has any medical study on this scale been attempted before?
Not quite on this scale. So once again, we're Americans. We do things big and bold. But we're also a melting pot of individuals, and we have a lot of people that have come from all different parts of the world here in America, and we need to make sure that when we do these studies, we have appropriate diversity of all the participants, so everyone's represented based on their geographical origins in particular. And so that's one of the reasons why the study is as large as it is. To directly answer your question, no study of this type is quite as large, but it's not to say there aren't other studies, in particular in other countries, like in England and a few other countries where similar studies have been launched. Some are actually quite far along doing similar things, just not at this scale. But I should really emphasize the other reason we need to do it at this scale is from some findings we are learning more and more in recent years or that are quite revealing indicate to us that for a lot of diseases, and we just talked about cancer, but let's talk about other very common diseases that fill hospitals and clinics around the world, diseases like diabetes, diseases like hypertension, mental illness, cardiovascular disease, and so forth. One thing is very clear is that every one of those diseases I just named actually are dozens of sub-diseases. And what's very clear is to untangle the unique aspects both of the genomics and the lifestyle and environmental contributions to those subtypes of each of those diseases will require studies of tens of thousands of individuals, actually probably hundreds of thousands of individuals. So to really get at all of these important contributions to human disease so that we can be precise to understand disease and treat disease is going to require scale that will need a cohort of at least 1 million individuals.
I'm speaking with Dr. Eric Green, director of the National Human Genome Research Institute, and we're talking about the Precision Medicine Initiative, which is changing the way doctors treat cancer and other diseases. So you have to be able to look at all this data, this immense amount of data. You have to be able to at least somewhat cost-effectively map this genomic material of these million Americans. What has changed in the recent years that has made us able to do this?
Well, let me give you a few examples of the difference between now and 10 years ago. 10 years ago, it cost us millions and millions of dollars to sequence a human genome, to reveal all the letters of a given person's genetic blueprint. Millions and millions of dollars. Today, that costs only a few thousand dollars, and the cost is dropping even more and will continue to. 10 years ago, only about 20 to 30% of healthcare providers in the United States use electronic health records. Today, that figure is over 95%, which means we are, on a daily basis, accumulating important medical information about patients that we can take advantage of and use for research purposes. You know, we didn't hear about a Fitbit 10 years ago. In fact, we were barely familiar with smartphones 10 years ago. And now, think of all the exciting technologies that are really early days, but can you imagine where they're heading now that today, you know, 160 million people carry smartphones compared to only a million 10 years ago. And we could imagine in 5 or 10 years, an even greater fraction of Americans will carry smartphones. Those can become devices that can monitor our physiology, can monitor our lifestyle, and can monitor our environmental exposures. And we imagine harnessing those technologies to collect data as part of research. And so I think it's the constellation of genomic advances, electronic health record availability, and new technologies that are in early days that'll be spectacularly exciting to use 5 and 10 years from now that really are key elements of this cohort study. And that will result in the generation of an immense amount of data, which will be really exciting to analyze and will be very revealing to what we need to know about human health and disease.
So provided this initiative gets funding from Congress, what would the initial steps be to get it up and running?
Well, we're in an intense planning phase now. The president has requested money in his fiscal 2016 budget for the initiative to get launched. In order to accomplish that, we need to have a plan for the early stages to implement actually beginning of next fiscal year, essentially, which is basically October 1 or so. So we're starting to piece all that together quite aggressively now. The National Cancer Institute has very good idea on what exactly needs to be done on the cancer element, and they are hard at work at getting ready, if additional funds come available, to use those to accelerate progress in cancer genomics. On the cohort, we are currently now in a phase trying to make lists of all the hard questions that need to be asked, and then having workshops and meetings with experts and using our advisors to really help flesh out some of the details. To be honest with you, we're not going to start building this cohort without doing a number of important pilot studies and feasibility studies to learn some important early lessons of how exactly to do this. I will start to build it slowly, but I think the next few years will be a combination of, you know, early building of the cohort, but also more importantly, in many ways, some early studies to help answer fundamental questions so that we can then scale up when the appropriate time comes, that we know exactly how to collect the individuals, recruit the million individuals, and get going on the science.
Before I let you go, two quick questions. So I think we did give a lot of credit to the 2003 Human Genome Project. But were there things that we haven't covered that that Human Genome Project really accomplished?
As somebody who participated in the Human Genome Project from beginning to end, I can tell you a lot of the successes of the Genome Project and the subsequent work that's gone on in genomics over the last 12 or 13 years has served as a foundation for this precision medicine initiative. And not only is it the science of genomics that is propelling forward some of the ideas for the precision medicine initiative, but also the style with which the project is being done. I mean, if you notice that, you know, there's a number of things that you asked me that I told you, well, we have to flesh out the details, we've got to work out the plan. I should really tell you and tell your listeners how similar this is to what things were like exactly 25 years ago. So if you go back 25 years, almost to the day, we were just about 6 or 7 months away from launching the Human Genome Project, this big audacious effort announced publicly, and it was very clear, you know, what we were going to try to do. But I could tell you quite candidly that 6 or 7 months before it started, we really didn't know precisely what we were going to do or how we were going to do it. We knew vague ideas, but we knew that we were going to have to constantly be strategizing, figuring out exactly the best approach, and every once in a while rip up the current plan and create a new one. And that's exactly what we did over the 13-year period of the Human Genome Project.
25 years ago, did a lot of you predict what the outcome would be?
I don't think any of us 25 years ago who were, especially my peers, where we were pinning our early career to this project could have a really firm idea of what it was going to look like. It seemed that it could sort of be seismic. It was going to really change many things. It's exceeded my wildest dreams in terms of all the opportunities. In many ways, I think the Precision Medicine Initiative is yet another thing that sort of signifies the success of the Genome Project. And so I would once again say that I can imagine how exciting and what the great opportunities will be and what some of the triumphs will come out of the work of the Precision Medicine Initiative, but I wouldn't dare say today I could fully understand all the things that are going to come out of it, because they'll probably even be more spectacular than I can envision today.
All right. Well, Dr. Eric Green, it has been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for taking the time.
Happy to be here.